happening, you guys? Welcome back to the Let's Go Win podcast, where we are here to help you be happy, healthy, wealthy, and get better every single day. We're going to be talking about some stuff that I think is, I know everyone is affected by this trauma that we've received at some point in our lives. And there's some real tools that are available. And this woman is going to shed some light on it. It's just going to be absolutely incredible. Thais Gibson is a PhD candidate with over 13 certifications and modalities such as CBT, NLP, somatic experiencing, internal family systems, and shadow work. She has nearly a decade of experience running a successful private practice and engaging with over 30,000 clients through individual sessions, workshops, and an educational platform. This diverse background has culminated in creating Gibson Integrated Attachment Theory, an innovative framework using traditional attachment theory, developmental psychology insights, and potent subconscious reprogramming techniques. This show is for absolutely everyone, and I mean that sincerely. Everyone that you know has had some form of trauma, has some sort of healing that came from their childhood. And it was amazing talking to Thais and to hear some of the numbers that she said. 95 to 97% of our decisions are made through subconscious, not through our conscious mind, our subconscious mind. How much the emotions play a part of both having success in goal planning, in having the decision making that we do on a daily basis. These numbers were absolutely mind-boggling. But here's the main thing that I think you're going to take away from this. There's real solutions. If you're not having success in your professional life, if you're not having success in your personal life, relationships, if you're struggling with money, there's real solutions. It's not like anybody wants to sabotage themselves. It's not like anybody wakes up and they're like, I want to suck today at my relationships, or I want to be terrible at my job. That's not the way it works. You're telling yourself, I want to do better. You might even be doing some of the practices. You might be doing meditation work. You might be doing affirmations. And what Thais really talked about is some of that's just not your fault. And actually, the vast majority is not your fault, quote unquote, to where you have some real challenges that you may or may not be aware of. And there are real solutions, whether it's NLP, whether it's she even gave a very simple practice that you can do in 21 days to really rewire your subconscious mind. I gave an example of me with my relationship with money. And we stepped through that, and it was so freaking simple. And I mean that as a great, great compliment to Thais and her system, because here's the deal. She started having opioid addictions through knee surgery. Literally, a college athlete has a knee injury, gets hooked on opioids, and now has an addiction challenge. Well, guess what? She didn't want that. She wanted to be living her best life, being a happy kid, being an athlete, but yet because of some of the traumas that she suffered as a child, yeah, she had some challenges with it. So this was incredible. I want you to listen to this. I want you to share this because she is absolutely blowing up on YouTube. She's got a ton of followers, a huge amount of people that have benefited from her work and her research, and you guys get it all for free. So do me a favor, do yourself a favor, share this with someone you love, let them in on this secret, quote unquote, which is, guess what? We all have some challenges and there's some real solutions so you can show up as the best version of you. One of the best shows, and I mean that, it was fascinating. I had so many more questions, and yet I don't know how much deeper I could have gone because she explained something in such a simple way that you and I can go apply it today. You're going to love this show. I appreciate you guys checking it out. Follow us on Let's Go Win 365. Let me know what you think. And enjoy it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you. That $1 million smile, my goodness, you're lighting up the room, which is awesome.
How did you get into the work that you're in? Because I, as I was telling you off air, NLP has just been in my world a ton recently. I don't know why. And for those that don't know, I'm just going to let you explain it, because often I think people are like, oh yeah, I know what that is. And I really don't know 100% either. So I'm curious how you chose this work. It chose you. And what is it exactly that you're doing on a daily basis?
Yeah, it's a really long story. I'll try to make it not too long. But I actually grew up and I had like a very chaotic childhood, lots of different challenges and things like that. I was a very sensitive kid. I think I internalized a lot of what was going on around me. And I played soccer in university. And that was sort of my outlet growing up. But in my scouting year, I had to have knee surgery. And I pretty much just got immediately addicted to opiates and didn't even really know what addiction was and what that meant until I was in it, until I had my first experience with withdrawals. You know, it was really like a challenging time. And I did end up getting a soccer scholarship and going off to school. And maybe from the outside, my life looked like it was, you know, doing okay. But on the inside, things were just falling apart. Like I was hanging on by a thread. And I was in school for psychology. I was always interested in like how the mind works and things like that. But if anybody's ever experienced addiction being like a really sort of extreme version of this, for me at least, I would go through these periods of time where I'd be like, I'm going to get clean. I'm going to get sober. I'm going to delete people's numbers from my phone. I'm going to avoid them. And then you go back and you repeat the same patterns over and over and over again. And it's like, that to me was one of the harder parts of it, is I was like, why can't I like change what I want to change? Why? I felt like I had no control. I felt so helpless and powerless. And I was actually in a psych class one day and somebody said to me, well, I was reading this book and the conscious mind can't outwill or overpower the subconscious mind. And in that moment, it was like this, like, oh my gosh, you just explained everything that I'm struggling with. And so I became obsessed with learning about the subconscious mind. So actually, while I was still in university, I went off and did like a first year long training just in hypnotherapy. And I wanted to understand like, what is going on? How does the subconscious mind work? Like, what is like, how do we actually change that? And what I learned very early on was not only can the conscious mind not outwill or overpower the subconscious mind, and obviously addiction is a really extreme version of that, but this happens everywhere. Like people are like, I'm going to quit eating chocolate for my New Year's resolution. 3 days later, they're eating chocolate. Or like, I'm going to quit struggling with anger so much. And then they're yelling at their spouse again. You know, these experiences we have are because the subconscious mind runs the show and is responsible for roughly 95 to 97% of our beliefs, our thoughts, our emotions, our behaviors. And so to me, I was like, geez, I'm in school for psychology. And I was in school for a long time after that. But it was like, why aren't people talking about where change really happens and like the principles of how we need change to take place? So I eventually got sober about 6 years after beginning very frequent use of opiates. And I want to be really mindful about how I say this, because this is not me giving advice to tell people don't go to rehab. But for me personally, I tried rehab. And I mean, I did leave very early the first time and then did an outpatient program. And neither of those really worked for me. And what did work for me, and again, I'm not saying everybody should just do it this way, but for me personally, I really wanted to figure out what was going on. And what I learned is by learning to reprogram the sort of baggage I was carrying around from my childhood that was causing my internal dialogue, my emotions, my nervous system to be all out of whack, by dealing with root cause, the surface symptoms fell away. And I was actually able to get sober of my own accord and just felt like, oh my goodness, I need to tell everybody this. And so that sort of became, I gave a bunch of free workshops, started a client practice, kept learning along the way. And now it's, you know, 14 years later and here we are.
Wow. I mean, there's so much to unpack there with, let's start with the knee injury. Cause look, I've had three knee surgeries. I recently had my shoulder replaced, and it's like, this was not an uncommon injury for an athlete. And it's not like anybody's like, yes, I want to get addicted to name a thing. It's not like you chose this, right? This was literally a surgery. And somehow, whether it was from trauma from childhood or, man, that really just speaks to my body, like I really need it. But it's like, I think so often people have this really negative connotation to, oh, you're addicted, therefore you're weak. And that's where I think I want to dispel that, to be like, And I, what you said was fascinating. 95 to 97% subconscious is literally running that programming. So I guess what I'm saying to everybody listening is like, hey, we all have trauma to some degree. Some degree, and whether you've gone through some of the training that Thais has or you're not familiar, I want you to know it's okay. And there's real solutions for you out there. It's not like you're to blame. And I mean that sincerely, because I think this is where I find addiction challenges, mental health awareness, where people are like, well, something's wrong with me. No, no, something has happened to you, and we need to do, like you said, some rewiring. We need to do some work to get in there. So I don't know. That's just an, I don't know if there's a question there. It's just my thoughts as you were talking. Like, my God, it's a knee surgery turned into an addiction that is not actually uncommon. And I'm so glad that you found this world.
Yeah. And for me, like, really, I'm very aligned with everything that you just said, because for me, it was like, well, I wasn't born an addict. So obviously I arrived here through nurture, you know, which is conditioning, in other words, or subconscious programming. So how can I get back to not having whatever programs I've somehow acquired along the way that are causing me to have to cope in this form? And that was sort of like the burning question. Like, I wasn't born this way. It's not purely a genetic thing. So like, how did I arrive here? And it's interesting because one of the first books I read about the subconscious mind as I was going through this hypnotherapy certification was, if you want to start observing, you know, your subconscious patterns, start meditating, start observing your thoughts. And I remember I sat down, and this was like another huge, like, kind of earth shattering aha moment for me. As I sat down, I closed my eyes and I went to meditate. I was like 20 years old, and I watched my first thoughts because I was trying to observe them. And I went, I'm never going to be able to do this. I can't do anything. I fail at everything. Why am I even bothering trying to change? And it was like, as I was able to observe them, I was going, oh my God, like, no wonder I numb myself all day. This is what I'm numbing. And what I realized is, when we go through trauma, and I sort of put this together a little bit later on, but when we go through trauma, it imprints the subconscious mind. So let's say you see your parents cheat on each other in childhood, you might go, oh, people betray each other. I'm going to get betrayed. Let's say you have really critical parents, you might form a core wound. I'm never good enough, or I'm unworthy. Or let's say that you see a lot of chaos in your childhood, you might go, I am unsafe, right? I can't trust people. I'm unsafe. There's so many, there's about 18 major core wounds that include, I will be abandoned, I don't belong, I will be excluded, I am unsafe, I will be betrayed, I'm not good enough, unworthy, I'm a bad person, I will be trapped, helpless, powerless. There's these really common core wounds. And what happens is, there's this acronym for this stuff, right? We have BTEA, beliefs form thoughts. So you can think of these core wounds as being these beliefs we acquire when we have experiences we can't properly emotionally process. So if somebody grows up and they have really critical parents, for example, as sort of a lower level trauma, it can still create this big core wound. So maybe they go, I'm not good enough. Well, what's going to happen is, throughout the course of your day, you're going to start, because you believe this, your subconscious creates this filter you see the world through. So you go to a new social event, and what do? You go, well, I'm not interesting enough. I'm not attractive enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not likable enough to make friends. It's all coming off. You can imagine the belief is the tree trunk. I am not good enough. And then you have the tree branches, all the ways you're not good enough. Well, now these thought patterns you're having of all the ways you're not good enough, how do you feel when you're thinking these things? Well, you feel like shit. You don't feel very good. And so what ends up happening is, here you are in this position where you're having negative emotions because of negative thoughts and negative beliefs. And guess what negative emotions are made up of? Neurochemical reactions. Your neurochemistry is shifting and changing. Then there was a neuroscientist named Antonio Damasio, who in 2008 discovered that every single decision we make is based on our emotions. So literally every decision we make, even people who are like, no, I'm really rational and logical, they're making emotionally based decisions at the tipping point and then just quick to rationalize or justify through logic. So we have beliefs create thoughts, create emotions, create actions, BTEA. And what's happening is, as long as you have a lot of dysfunctional core beliefs because of unresolved trauma, your thoughts are going to be crazy. Your emotions are going to be all over the map. Your neurochemistry will be affected, and your actions and decisions according to that will also be affected. So my quest became, like, from just me as a person healing, what are all my negative core beliefs that I adopted from all the chaos I was exposed to growing up? How can I start rewiring those things? And it changed my world. And that was, you know, one of the main things I focused on. There's some other stuff too, but that was like absolutely life-changing to the point where not only do I hardly ever get triggered anymore for the past like 7-8 years since really getting a good handle on this stuff, but when I do, it's far less intense. I used to be, you know, I'd get really angry, really triggered by things over a decade ago. And then the other part is that my nervous system's way more regulated. You know, I used to be constantly like in panic, fight or flight. And now like I'm grounded and anchored in my world. And so you'll see huge, huge impacts, not just to your mind, but also to your body from learning how to really reprogram these subconscious pain points. And that's how we resolve past traumas and stop carrying that baggage around all the time.
Yeah. Again, as you talk, I'm like, oh my goodness. Now we're getting neurochemistry. We're talking hormones. And here's the challenge that I want everybody to understand. You mentioned low level trauma. And this is one of the things that's so fascinating is people are like, well, I wasn't molested or beaten, or think of some of the really nasty things that should never happen to any kids. And then they discount the fact that, oh, like you said, mom and dad, maybe they just didn't know how to really speak to us without making us not feel worthy. And by the way, I had the most incredible parents in the world, and I got their baggage too.
Yeah.
They didn't know. They did the best they could with the tools they had, right? But here's what's fascinating about this. And this is where I think people need to understand. When you're battling seriously, like the biology of like hormonally, things are happening. That's really, really, really tough to overcome because you are fighting now what limiting beliefs or whatever you have in the subconscious. Now it's firing off, like whether it's, I don't know, it's too much cortisol or your dopamine is too low or you have folic acid, there's a mess. Like, and again, I am not an expert in any way, stretch of the imagination, but I know enough to know you're battling some serious biology at play here. This is where this work is so important. This is where getting access, whether it's through NLP, you had mentioned doing hypnosis, meditation, breath work. I mean, there's so many ways you can attack this, but I want people to hear, even if it was low level, maybe you can talk about the different traumas just so people can understand, look, it didn't have to be that category 5 hurricane to cause some damage. Like there's some challenges that were created. And again, it's not go point the finger at mom or dad. They did the best they could, but guess what? You have some stuff.
100%.
And so maybe that, yeah. So if you dive into that a little bit, because the brain chemistry, I mean, talk about power. And perhaps that's what the opioids were doing for you. It's like, oh, that feels good. I am numbing the real feelings. Oh, I like that. And now I don't have to face it. And your body's saying this, not even your conscious mind is saying, your body is saying that to you.
Exactly. And so that's like, you raised so many important points. The first part is yes. Like I was numbing my internal world because I was numbing all this internal dialogue and how that was affecting me neurochemically. And the absence of serotonin and dopamine and oxytocin and things that I would have needed to feel good, because so much of it was taken up by like probably cortisol and norepinephrine responses from all the stress I was under from thinking such stressful and negative thoughts towards myself. But you raise this really important point, which is that not everybody has these like to get there. Not everybody has these category 5 hurricanes. Like it's not always so intense in terms of the trauma. So what's really interesting is when you look at how the subconscious is programmed, it's programmed through repetition and emotion. Now, emotion will always take precedence over repetition. So we can have the example of somebody, you know, Bob's felt safe in a car his whole life, God forbid, but Bob gets into a car accident tomorrow. He gets into the car the next day after, you know, he's fine. Everything was okay. His car got totaled. It shook him up a little bit. But he goes back into the car the following day to drive and his hands are shaking. You know, when emotion is intense enough, it can create immediate imprints. And that's what we think of trauma with a big T, right? Like these big traumatic events. People can have, you know, I came across people in rehab, people who I used to spend time with would be like, I had a perfect childhood. Why am I messed up? What's going on? And it's like, well, no, like everybody has stuff. And so what happens is if you get enough repetition of small things, it has the same impact as a big level trauma does. So let's say, for example, we can compare. a really big common core wound for people is the core wound of abandonment. Well, somebody can be in a place where like their parents literally abandoned them. They were given up for adoption, or one parent leaves when they're a child and never comes back. But also you can have really loving parents who are really warm, but they work a lot. And the repetition of the perceived abandonment of working those long hours will actually create a very similar imprint on the subconscious mind as a high level singular event that we think of as our big T trauma. And the same thing happens with when people feel unsafe. There could be abuse in the home, big T trauma, clearly unsafe. There could also be a lot of inconsistency where like food's not on the table. There's a lack of structure or routine. Children move around a lot. They're constantly forced into new environments. They don't have enough stability and structure. And the repetition of that can create this feeling of unsafety that might produce a lot of anxiety for somebody as an adult. So you can take all these big core experiences we think of with a big T trauma, and you can actually find that little T events repetitively enough, which the vast majority of people are exposed to, can have such a similar impact on the brain.
All right. So if I'm sitting here and I'm like, all right, I'm with you guys. I have some trauma. It happened just like the majority of the world, whether it was big T or little T. Where do I start, Thais? Because you mentioned the 20-year-old you going and doing meditation and saying exactly what I hear people say all the time. I can't do that. What's funny is I've practiced meditation in and out for the at least 20 years, but really, really focused work for the last 15. And I started in college as well, but I don't remember ever saying, gosh, I'm not good at this. But I hear that so frequently, and I want to tell people all the time, there is no right or wrong to how you're doing it. And I don't know, I don't think I've ever met somebody that's absolutely reached that pinnacle of meditation. I mean, and I know some monks, they literally, my father-in-law's Thai, his brother's a Buddhist monk, maybe not a very well-practiced one, but anyway, getting back to the question. Where would you tell people to start to say, okay, I don't like maybe how I show up in relationships, at the work. I don't like screaming at my kids. I love them to death, but it's just my trigger. You mentioned that word, one of my favorite words, both positive and negatively. What would you say to somebody to be like, all right, let's start here?
Yeah, it's a really great question. I can actually give a little exercise. It's a really meaningful place for people to start if they want to get really specific, because I find that in the specifics, it makes a big difference. So the first thing I would say is like, if you pay close attention, you'll probably notice that certain types of things trigger you, right? There's certain, it's like when your partner pulls away, when your boss is critical at work, when somebody's inconsistent with their communication, like you'll probably notice there's pretty similar patterns of events that are your like big triggers. And if you can sort of observe in your mind, okay, what are some of those common things? Is it in relationships? Is it in the workplace? Is it when I try to do things outside of my comfort zone or start a new goal or go after something meaningful to me? Like what types of things trigger me? And then you can ask yourself a really meaningful question about that, which is, what do I make this mean about myself? And what you'll see is that's actually a way of extracting the subconscious information, because we tend to get triggered by the things that are causing us to be confronted with our biggest core wounds or core beliefs. Now, there's really common ones. I'll list off a few really briefly, but we'll usually have, if it's more relational, you'll see it's like, I'm abandoned, I'll be betrayed, I'll be alone, I'll be excluded, I'll be disliked or rejected. If it's a lot more workplace related stuff, it might be, I'm not good enough, I'm unworthy, I am unsafe, you know, my job isn't safe, things like that. Betrayal can show up there as well, big time. And then you'll also see we can have these core wounds around feeling trapped, feeling helpless, feeling powerless, feeling like we'll be a failure, we're incapable, or we don't belong. And these are the major core wounds, along with I am stupid and I am disrespected. Those are the biggest core wounds actually like found in cognitive behavioral therapy. And so somebody should hopefully be able to say, oh, I really could see the ones that stand out for me in that big core wounds or core beliefs list. And then what we want to do is we want to actually be able to reprogram them. And a lot of people will be like, oh, let's do affirmations. I'm sorry, but affirmations are not going to work. Like I just, you know, it's all you're getting is repetition, right? And what we need to understand is how the subconscious gets programmed. So the conscious mind speaks language. The subconscious mind doesn't care about language. It speaks through emotion and imagery. And a really obvious way you'll know this is if I say, whatever you do, do not think of the pink elephant. I'm sure your mind flashed some sort of image of the pink elephant. Your conscious mind heard the do not. Your subconscious does not hear do not. It doesn't speak language. It doesn't care. And these core wounds, they're not conscious. Nobody's waking up going, I can't wait to tell myself all day that I'm going to be betrayed by everybody and that I'm going to be abandoned by the people in my life. Those are not conscious choices. They're subconscious pre-existing programs. So we have to solve at the subconscious level. So what you can do is we take whatever the core wound is and we find the opposite. Really easy to find the opposite. I'm abandoned. I'm connected. I'm betrayed. I have loyalty. I'm not good enough. I'm good enough. So we'll just use I'm not good enough. What you would do is you find the opposite. I am good enough. And then we need to learn what language the subconscious actually speaks. So the subconscious speaks in emotion and in imagery. Okay. So if I say, don't think of the pink elephant, you think of the pink elephant. And so, because we see the actual image. And what we need to be able to do is we need to fire and wire emotion and imagery because we're creating neural pathways at the level of the subconscious mind. So what's really cool about this is you can come up with a really simple tool where you need to be able to speak to the subconscious mind. So we would take not good enough. We'd oppose it with I am good enough. Then you want to come up with 10 pieces of memory, okay, every day for 21 days. That's what research shows us it takes to rewire complete new neural networks. And memory, every memory is the container of emotion and imagery, which is the language of the subconscious mind. So if you were to recount your favorite childhood memory, you would start smiling and you would say, oh, on the playground, this happened. And you would picture the image of the playground, and the emotion in our memories are all still intact because the subconscious is a warehouse of memory. So what we would do, very simple, 21 days, you can record it and just listen back to it and feel about it. But you're going to take this big core wound you have, find the opposite, 10 pieces of memory that oppose it. So I'm not good enough. I'm good enough because I graduated from this program. I showed up this way as a friend. I did this thing in my business that I'm really happy about. And each time you do that, you're using your conscious mind to speak to the subconscious mind in its language. And then you're leveraging repetition for the rewiring process. And this works profoundly well for people as long as they stick to it for 21 days and feel about the opposite, because you're actually rewiring what's pre-existing.
Yeah, that's, as much as I don't want to agree, I know that's the case, especially when it comes to affirmations. And I mean that I love doing affirmations. It just makes me happy. However, to your point, you're not solidifying anything without that feeling. You hear people talking about whether it's manifestation, whether it's, trying to rewire, you have to attach that emotion to it. And it's really interesting that, by the way, really nice job to simplify in a very complex thing, but you did, and it made it amazing. So let's take an example. Maybe you already gave a perfect one, but I see people, especially myself, my relationship to money was not great because it was the pretty people when they went by the country club, which for some reason that was a bad thing, or it was for someone else other than them. I didn't necessarily have all the tools that you're talking about, but through some personal development, deeper work, a lot of just me time, kind of figured out, well, that's horseshit. Money is just a thing and I can create a lot, and then it creates this good stuff. So the emotion finally came to me, but it took, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years. And this was after making, seven figures a year, where it's like, I felt bad about who I was doing this. I'm curious, if you were to diagnose somebody like me for a second, you're like, all right, 21 days, dude, let's figure out how to rewire that. Because I hear this often, especially with relationships, where people are like, oh, I just bring this into my life. Or they wouldn't say it that way. Excuse me. I attract so-and-so into my life. Or I only date bad boys would be another example, where it's like, yes. And by the way, let's own our piece of it. You're really bringing this into your world. So let's do the money example. Do you have one where you're like, oh yeah, this one, no problem. Because I wish somebody had a shortened window of what mine was. 5 years, that's a lot of freaking work to know that money's just a thing and it's cool and you can help other people. But I didn't feel that way for a long time.
Okay, so I love this. So, because this is fun. So the first thing is it's individual. So there's about 35 really common core beliefs around money that are not like our core beliefs from a cognitive behavioral therapy, but like our money stories. I can't save. I can't earn. money doesn't grow in trees. Money is the root of all evil, you know, and they actually link back to core wounds underneath it. But the first question would be, and I'll ask you, if you at the time, so you have to go back to the moment that you had the resistance to making more money. Okay. So if you can picture like a time in your mind or a season of your life where you felt like that. And if you can imagine from that moment, all of a sudden you wake up and you start making all of the money that you ever wanted to the next day. Do you notice a little bit of feeling of resistance come up in your body at that period of time?
Oh, no question. No. That's not for me. That's for anyone else but me.
And so if you're, okay, good. So that's for anybody else but me. And if I have all of the money tomorrow, okay, from that period of time, what do I make it mean? Or what am I afraid will then happen?
Tons of guilt. I can put myself right back in it and be like, I felt guilty for making this somehow. Maybe it was going past what my parents had done in terms of income, not wanting to share that. But yeah, a ton of guilt.
Good. And if we explore it further, so you feel guilt. So guilt is the emotion. So emotions are always produced by pre-existing beliefs or thoughts. So I feel guilt because I feel like I'm not deserving. I feel like I'm not worthy. I feel like I'm going to seem greedy and seem like a bad person. I feel like I'm going to, people are going to see me differently and dislike me or exclude me. What are some things that come up for you there?
Oh, at that point, I'm trying again. Let me put myself back there. I'm this simple kid from Montana, and I don't want to make it about me. That's a big one. In fact, that's one that I would still continue to work over because it's like, oh, don't make it about you. So I'm going to be selfish. I'm just going to keep it to myself. No one's going to know, right?
Yeah.
And that one still comes up. And I've done a lot of work, guys. So I'm really curious to see what Thais is about to tell me.
So underneath I am selfish is always the core wound, I am bad. So if I'm making it about me and I'm prioritizing, and then my guess would be maybe, and you don't have to share anything, you don't feel comfortable, but that maybe you grew up in a childhood where you kind of had to maybe either grow up fast or kind of look out for other people sometimes, or you weren't allowed to take up too much space because other people were struggling around you. Was there any of that in your history?
No. I mean, I was middle child, so we could start there.
Okay, yeah.
I'm middle child. No, on the surface, everything would have seemed fine, but there's certainly this, don't talk about yourself, be humble.
Yeah.
If you do talk about yourself, oh no, that's like the worst.
Yeah,
like
you're just bad. Don't do it. You're... and so what usually happens when people have this big, oh no, I'll be selfish underneath it's I am bad. So you can see if you trace backwards from your feelings of guilt around making money to, okay, well, what thoughts or stories or beliefs are pre-existing? You can see sort of the line that takes place. And so people can actually find this for themselves by literally just going through and being like, well, what do I make it mean if I make more money? What do I make it mean? Or what am I afraid will happen if I end up in a position where I have my dream goals or my career or a relationship I always wanted? What do I make it mean? If you have resistance in your body, it's because you have these pre-existing thought and belief patterns. And they can be linked back to those core wounds. And if you'll find them, if you keep rotating those questions, what do I make it mean? Oh, I'm selfish. Okay, if I'm selfish, what does that then mean? Oh, I'm a bad person, right? So you can see the link back to the core belief. So all a person would do then, like if you were still there, for example, is what's the opposite of bad? I am innocent, right? I can be a good person or an innocent person and still have abundance. 10 pieces of evidence a day, 21 days, you will see the needle move in the relationship you have to money.
Love it. The repetition, guys, I want you to hear it very, very clear. She's only asking for 3 weeks of your life consistently. Do it. And I'm telling you, this is life altering when it comes to being a parent, being a in the workplace, in your professional life, certainly in relationships. Oh my goodness, if people would literally commit to, whether it's being a part of Thais's world or 21 days of this, we're talking some major moves. You have a topic on here that now we'll get a little bit more into, perhaps people that are like, okay, I've gone through all that, but you talk about setting and achieving goals using your subconscious mind. Everyone thinks, okay, cool. Goals are a good thing. I should probably set them. And everyone has their own methodology of doing it. But you, again, several things you mentioned, 95 to 97%. That is literally, that's, guys, tough to access right away. So when you're setting these goals, as much as it be like, yes, I have my bathroom mirror, I see them, but your conscious mind's going, no way, dude, not happening. or sorry, your conscious mind might be saying that, but your subconscious is saying not happening, that becomes problematic. So how would you go about setting it? Even if we're into mid-February, it's like, man, I'm not hitting my goals so far this year. Maybe we didn't set them properly. How would you go about it?
Yeah, amazing question. First big thing, your subconscious, the two biggest components that make up your subconscious, core beliefs, your needs. That's it. Those are the things running the show. And everything we suffer over emotionally is because of unmet needs or core beliefs or a combination of the two. So really obvious example or analogy is just somebody could have an unmet need for love and connection. Maybe they move to a new city by themselves. All their friends and family are at home. And they may naturally have this unmet need for connection. And that's going to cause pain. Pain is good a lot of the time. It's giving us feedback that something is out of alignment if we're willing to pay attention and inquire. Then what causes suffering is the story we tell about it. So we go, I'm so unlikable. I have no friends. And it's because we feel the loneliness of the unmet need for connection. As soon as we tell a story, we suffer and then we get stuck. So you can kind of apply that analogy to goals, right? Somebody can say, I want to make more money. But if they have no subconscious needs, we all have a set of subconscious needs that are running our lives. There's usually four or five for each of us that are really meaningful. I've seen people who'd come into my practice when I had it, who would go, Thais, I really want to make more money. I'm stuck around money. First thing we would do, we would look for their limiting beliefs. If they didn't really have many limiting beliefs around money, the next thing I'd look for was their needs. Do they have subconscious needs that are actually in alignment with money? And the answer would be no. An example is I saw this man once, and he was trying to start a business, and he really wanted to, you know, get his business off the ground. And then we looked, he was still working full time at his other job, but he was trying to like really make his side hustle into his reality. And we looked, and all of his subconscious needs were approval, materialism, social connection, and community. So what do you think he's doing with his time? He's not spending his money on reinvesting himself in himself, growing, trying to create more passive streams of income and working on it. He's spending his money on fancy clothes for approval, going out with friends to meet his social needs and being out in the community, buying things. And he's spending things on his money on things material, right? So we have to do two things whenever we're trying to actually succeed, and how this is what we do to get our conscious and subconscious on the same page, right? Anytime somebody's struggling with achieving goals, it's because their conscious mind wants something that their subconscious doesn't. That's actually what the experience is of both procrastination and self-sabotage. Nobody's consciously sabotaging themselves. Nobody's like, I'm going to sabotage my life today. People are doing it subconsciously because their conscious goals and subconscious needs are out of alignment, or they've got limiting beliefs that are causing them to resist stuff. So first thing you do, the exercise we did, you've got this big goal. Okay, I haven't achieved it yet, or I'm not going to achieve it tomorrow. Why? What do I make this goal mean? And your excuses or your reasons why are your limiting beliefs. Oh, I don't have enough time. Oh, I'm going to fail. I'm not going to be good enough. Good. Go plug in the reprogramming tool. Go reprogram your limiting beliefs. Get that mess out of the way. Second thing is, what are your needs? Your subconscious needs will not be in your desires, not I want to make more money. They will be in your behavior. And you can most easily see what they are by what you spend time talking about, what you naturally read and learn and research about, what you spend your money on, where you naturally show up without anybody having to ask you. These are your subconscious needs. Your mind is constantly yearning for these things, gunning for them all the time. And you'll see it maybe around emotional connection or social connection or personal growth or fitness, health, wealth building. You know, we can have all these different needs, but if your goal is out of alignment with your subconscious needs, that's what we'll experience as sabotage, right? Conscious mind says one thing, subconscious runs the show, says, nope, we're going to do something else over here. So we need to learn what our needs are, and then we need to learn to bring them together. So I'll give one more quick example of this for how we can link them. So I had this woman come to me, and she was like, I want to make more, or she said, I want to lose weight. That was like her big thing. She's like, every year I say I'm going to eat healthier, and I never end up going and doing anything about it. I sabotage my New Year's resolutions by like day 6 or 7 every year. So we looked at her subconscious needs, and they were social connection, comfort, safety, and family. And so obviously her conscious mind says, go to the gym, eat healthier. And her subconscious mind's like, no, that's going to take time away from what makes me feel safe, what makes me feel comfortable, from social and from family. And so of course you experience sabotage. So what we do is we find ways to link them together. Really simple. Go to the gym with friends. do group fitness classes, go on hikes with your family, take, you know, cooking classes with your spouse. And all of a sudden, when you find ways to bring in the things you naturally need and go after in your life with your conscious mind's goals, you're aligning your conscious and subconscious mind, and it diminishes resistance. So if we can really boil down how we want to create and achieve things in our lives by going, what is the goal? Let me get clear. What are my buts? I haven't achieved this because why? What do I make the goal mean? Reprogram those beliefs using the tool we talked about earlier, auto-suggestion, and then turn around and align the goal with my needs will naturally show up without resistance, and we won't procrastinate and self-sabotage.
So good. I want everybody to hear, especially guys, I want you to hear something she said. Pain is not necessarily a bad thing. We've spent a lot of this episode talking about feelings and emotions and really the power that comes along with these. But often, so another one, I was taught boys don't cry. That was, you know, a kid from Montana, like boys don't cry. Now, my brother wasn't taught that. My younger brother, 3.5 years, but I was. For whatever reason, that was the, you know, that was the season my parents were in. But here's what I'm, and it's not just guys, it's all human beings. Often we want to stuff that feeling to be like, no, I don't feel bad. No, I feel really good. No, I'm amazing. I'm fine. But what I heard you say, Thais, and I think we need to hit this point home, because I even still do this as a natural stuffer of things like, nope, I'm good. Just put it down there. We're just going to stick it way down. Is to actually feel that emotion, because if you want to create lasting change, you've got to go through it. Like, this is just a part of it. With that being said, and maybe I simplified that too much, because you mentioned it, you're like, pain is not necessarily a bad thing. It's giving you a heads up, like you're out of alignment, something's going on. What would you tell people that are like, I don't want to face that fear, but if you want to get through it, man, you got to.
Emotions are feedback that help you make subconscious information conscious. That's their purpose. So when we feel like, it's such an interesting example you gave where you said, you know, I was scared to make more money. You know, I had this like resistance. You know, that resistance is telling you something there is blocking you. It's why you feel uncomfortable. And so you would never be able to discover that you even had a block there had you not first noticed that it made you feel a certain way. So what's happening, pain is always giving us feedback. And if we're willing to look and actually investigate, we can solve for root cause that then solves for the pain. So for example, if I were to go to a new city, leave all my friends and family behind and move to a new city as somebody who really cares about connecting with people, if I felt really disempowered to meet new people and make new friends and things like that, I would probably feel sad. Now, the sadness would be communicating to me, you have an unmet need for connection. As human beings, we actually wouldn't evolve for so long if we didn't have emotions letting us know and prodding us to adapt and to change. But when we try to stuff down the emotions and we try to stuff away those feelings, we're actually stuffing away the feedback that is prompting us to evolve to the next level of who we're supposed to become. And as long as we stuff things down, we're kind of keeping ourselves stagnant, right? We can't actually be like, what is the unmet need or what is the limiting belief and breakthrough? And I also think that pain, you know, when, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but for me, I know that some of the most painful moments of my life, if I had to do them over again 100 times, I would in a heartbeat, because sometimes pain also brings us the most powerful lessons, right? And sometimes we have these experiences of like, you know, it was interesting for me to change my relationship to pain when I was able to look at the hardest things that I went through and then be like, what did I learn? How did that serve me? What was I letting go of that was no longer working for me in my life? How did pain actually prompt me into growth? And when I did that enough times on hard experiences, I'm no longer feared pain. Even now, if something hard happens, I'm like, this sucks. This is hard. And I know something really good is going to come of it. So you have more patience and more bandwidth for it, right? And you're able to investigate and get curious instead of going to storytelling. Oh, why me? Oh, these things always happen to me. Instead, you get into a place that's a lot more productive in your relationship to pain.
So I've said so many times, but she just related it back to, yes, when something shitty happens, every time something amazing is coming next. It just every time. And I mean, you guys know, like losing my dad, horrible, freaking horrible. And guess what? Some amazing things, perspective came into my life. But being willing to see it, Oftentimes, that's the harder part. I want to give you, just because I look, I could ask you question after question after question for me, but I'm wondering what I didn't know enough to ask you, where you're like, Jay, we got to share this with the audience before we wrap up, because I could go a million ways. I have questions on leadership. I have questions on, like, you know, does this stuff happen to you? And you just, well, but I would rather give you the moment to be like, you know what? We need to make sure the audience hears this before we kind of start to wrap it all up.
I would say, in summary, we covered some of the most important things. Like, I would say, number one, do not look at your emotions as something negative. Look at them as feedback. Number two, find what the actual root cause feedback is. We spend way too much time as a society trying to control surface symptoms rather than looking at root cause. Let me take a pill for how I feel rather than being like, what is the feeling telling me and how can I recondition what's not working for me? So I really want to, and I'm not saying nobody should take their medication. but what I am saying is I think your body and your mind are going to give you feedback. And if we can establish a relationship with root cause, that's how surface symptoms go away. But the root cause from a mental emotional standpoint are often, do I have limiting beliefs? We talked about tools for how to find them. Do I have unmet needs? And if we have regular healthy habits for how to meet our needs on a daily basis, we will feel fulfilled and our mind will be a lot more still as a result. So I would say three really important things. We covered them, and that's some of the stuff that I think is the most meaningful because it's most root cause oriented.
I'm using emotions or feedback, and I don't know. I've never put those three words together, and it's facts, and it's so good. So thank you for simplifying so much. If I can't imagine them not wanting to go check you out, see what you're working on, everything that you're doing today. So where is the best place for my audience to be like, okay, need some more of that in my life. Where should we find you?
So I put daily content out on YouTube. So I put a daily video out all about all kinds of stuff, but it's called the Personal Development School, but it's all personal development for your subconscious mind. So you can check it out there, or our website is personaldevelopmentschool.com.
So good. Thank you. I talk about this stuff, but you really applied both the science piece of it to the emotions, and you made it simple. And I mean that as a compliment. I really do, because every single person listening, literally every one of you, you deal with some of this. And by the way, that's okay. It makes you a human being. I have some tools. Go check out her school. Thais, thanks for coming on. You're awesome.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun to chat with you.
It's my pleasure. You guys, please go check it out. The work she's doing is real. It's really impactful. And I think everyone can say, you know what? It's not my fault. And there are tools. Don't be the victim. Go find a true solution. Be your own victor. And she has these tools. Go check out her stuff. This was a freaking awesome episode. I'm so glad I got a chance to ask my questions. Hit me up on Let's Go Win 365 on Instagram. Tell me what I missed. What should I have asked Thais that I missed out on? Let me know. And until next time, remember, your mindset matters. I appreciate all of you so much. Talk soon.